Hello, happy Thursday. I'm Molly McAllister, and this is All Access Pass on CITR 101.9 FM. We're broadcasting live in Vancouver on the unceded territory of the Hunkaminam-speaking Musqueam people. Tonight's episode is a party tray assortment of goodies. We're bringing you a news story about accessible radio, a chat about accessibility at UBC, a throwback Thursday to an article published in 1992, and some live conversation about, you guessed it, accessibility. In the studio tonight, I'm joined by fellow collective member and music guru Spencer Williams, and a very special guest and awesome friend, Caitlin Tatham. Here to chat about accessibility, too. Let's start things off with some music to get you going.
Here is Look at the Water, Look to the Water by Ashley Eamon.
Look to the water, look to the sky, over the sea, love, find a boat going by. Look to the treetops, look to the tide, over the sea,
offering up a geographical jackpot. I'd probably choose the same spot that I stand in. Magical brick top to a crowded street. I'm gathering up my wits completely to hit the ground. Running is all I need. But if in a moment ground it opens, swallowing up each and every piece of me, I'd probably click my heels and happily end up in the sea. Look to the stars to meet me. Liberty like this don't always come so easy.
Look to the water, look to the sky, over the sea, love, find a boat going.
Discorder Magazine has been supporting local music for over 30 years. Thanks to the long-term support of the Rickshaw Theater, Discorder lives. Your favorite bands are playing at the Rickshaw Theater. Check out their calendar just behind the cover of Discorder Magazine or at rickshawtheater.com.
Welcome back to All Access Pass on CITR 101.9 FM. So tonight, as we said before, is definitely a big array of different things we're going to be talking about. And I'd like to start off with a news headline that came out on Monday, actually. So the CBC announced this past Monday that they're about to start a pilot project to make radio more accessible for people who are deaf or have hearing loss. So they shared the details of their project, and it's aimed at making Canadian public radio accessible to an estimated 1 to 3 million Canadians who are unable to listen to current programming. They'll be making text transcripts of the popular show on CBC Radio 1, The Current. Having them available on a daily basis on their website. They'll also post one filmed and edited ASL-interpreted radio documentary from The Current each month. The pilot project is aiming to give people who are deaf or hard of hearing the opportunity to join with The Current, engaging in the larger conversation about what's happening in the world around us, and accessing veteran journalist Anna Maria Tremonti's program that includes varied perspectives, voices, and ideas on current issues that affect Canadians. This is a new way for CBC to connect traditional radio with the digital sphere, and it's a move that makes radio more accessible for everyone. We are increasingly seeing the digitization of public media, but the rapid rate of putting things online hasn't really been paralleled in every case with a matched increasing rate of accessibility of content. As media content switches over to digital sources, we do really have to utilize the opportunity and use the technology that is readily available to make sure the content is accessible to as many people as possible. The ASL, for those of you that don't know, stands for American Sign Language. So the ASL interpreted documentaries and the daily transcripts of Tremonti's radio show, The Current, will be accessible on CBC's website for people to read, watch, print, and share online. Transcribing the show also increases the accessibility for people who are not deaf or hard of hearing. It's going to provide an educational resource for post-secondary students and their instructors in universities, and also provides new immigrants with a resource to expand their knowledge of written English, which they may have an easier time reading than listening to it live. These new formats of radio are truly benefit to people of all abilities. You can check out right now CBC's The Current story titled Deaf Musicians. They've presented that in a YouTube video with visual ASL interpretations and audio. It's really neat for people to watch who maybe haven't been exposed to sign language before, because you can hear the narrator and watch the ASL interpretation at the same time. And it's also just a really powerful radio documentary about people who are deaf who have become really successful musicians. I just want to say what CBC is doing is really cool, and we really hope that other radio broadcasters across the country can start adopting the same kind of principles. And it would be really neat on our show as we go forward through the next couple weeks if we can start maybe providing some transcripts from our show. And you know what? We really hope as well to do at least one, hopefully more, ASL-interpreted content stories throughout the year. In going back to the YouTube video that's already been produced by The Current and is online, one of the musicians that is featured in the video is named Sean Forbes, and he's definitely a name you should plug into YouTube to check out. To get you started, we're actually going to play you one of his songs. So this is Sean Forbes with I'm Deaf.
People often ask me, so where you to denounce. Stand up, speak, or re-pronounce. Now there's people out there telling you what you can't do. You can't overcome, you got too much to prove. I never listened. How ironic. Friends without benefits, how platonic. I hear with an A, I see with four eyes. They call me C, now tell me why. When I lie, deafer than death, Jim, I'm so, so black. Deafer than death, dumber, I'll make the world go deaf. I've got half tones, but I'm not tone deaf. I stop saying the obvious, but I ain't done yet. It's a message I'm acknowledging. Just stand up, listen, start following. Never be held back or feeling lost, cause I know what it's like. I've been down that route. I'm all inspired by Jimmy Abbott. Pitching with one hand full of talent. Stevie Wonder never saw the keys, and Helen Keller was capable of communicating. I can feel the bass, can't hear the treble clap. What do you expect when you're so, so deaf? And when they tell you you got a lot to prove, you better move. Cause when the day is over, everything's full circle. I'd rather be deaf than be Steve Urkel. I'd rather not hear, rather not listen. I'm the perfect imperfection, never restricted. Deafer than death, Jim, I'm so, so deaf. Deafer than death, dumber, I'll make the world go deaf. I've got deaf tones, but I'm not tone deaf. I stop stating the obvious, but I ain't done yet. Deafer than death, Jim, I'm so, so deaf. Deafer than death, dumber, I'll make the world go deaf. I've got deaf tones, but I'm not tone deaf. I stop stating the obvious, but I ain't done yet.
Discorder Magazine has been supporting local music for over 30 years. Thanks to the long-term support of the Rickshaw Theater, Discorder lives. Your favorite bands are playing at the Rickshaw Theater. Check out their calendar just behind the cover of Discorder Magazine or at rickshawtheater.com.
Broad Fair is back on Thursday, February 25th. Meet face-to-face with top universities from around the world and start planning to travel. Learn about degrees in law, medicine, health sciences, arts, technology, pharmacy, business, hotel management, and much more. Check out our travel zone for volunteering, language programs, adventure travel, and work abroad. For more info, visit studyandgoabroad.com. There's also free admission.
Liveband.com is Vancouver's community-driven concert calendar. New shows are added daily by the city's most active promoters, musicians, and by the driving force of the music scene, the fans. Liveband.com's listings are different because they are integrated with profiles updated by bands and business owners as they promote upcoming events. Check out the archives to see how closely we've worked within the community to put on the shows you love. Visit livemusicvancouver.com for the latest independent and major label event listings. Liveband.com, Vancouver's community-driven concert calendar.
Yeah. day.
Welcome back to All Access Pass on CITR 101.9 FM.
That was... You just heard Acres of Lions with City by the Sea.
So you also heard before City by the Sea, that song we talked about, I'm Deaf by Sean Forbes. I really recommend that you either just plug it into YouTube or go to CBC Radio 1's website and check that out. He has lots of other songs, and it's cool to watch the videos because he is signing the songs in the videos as well. Up next on the show, we're going to talk a little bit about another story that has to do with accessibility, but it's not a current story. It actually took place quite a while ago. So we're going back almost a quarter century for this segment of the show, with a window into what accessibility in universities looked like the year before I was born. Out of the archives of the internet, which didn't even exist at the time this was published, I recently found an article in the Canadian Journal of Higher Education, written by Jennifer Lee Hill from the University of Victoria in the Department of Psychological Foundations in Education, and the paper is titled Accessibility: Students with Disabilities in Universities in Canada. Hill's paper examined the efforts to ensure students with disabilities were able to access higher education across 27 different Canadian universities. Hill's article shows us that indeed academics and university faculty were considering issues of accessibility in the early 1990s. Although it's important to point out that the scope of the accessibility was much narrower, Hill focused almost completely on physical barriers on campuses, whereas accessibility issues that we talk about on our show here include a much wider range of access needs that also include things like social, cognitive, racial, ethnic, sexual, and psychological access. We also see in Hill's study a considerably different set of terminology used, and in many cases, descriptions and labels that are considered disrespectful, ableist, or discriminatory in the present day. So we've definitely changed the way that we talk about access and talk about accessibility, but it definitely was talked about back then as well, and there's definitely some overlapping themes. Katie, one of our collective members that you guys have heard since January, was unable to join us live in studio today, so her and I actually sat down yesterday to chat about the accessibility-related issues and resources available at UBC presently, so I'll give you a taste of that conversation now.
Oh.
found a couple days ago. It was pretty amazing to me. This goes back almost a quarter of a century, and it's actually related to the present topic that we're going to be talking about right now. It's a window into what accessibility in universities looked like the year before I was born, so in 1992. And to be honest, when I stumbled across Jennifer Lee Hill's article, I was a little bit surprised. The date stamp sent me for a bit of a loop, and the title included the words accessibility and universities together. I didn't, I guess, really think that was a topic that was talked about that long ago. Maybe it was different in the way that we're going to talk about it now, but I think I was actually impressed that someone had written a paper in 1992 about this really important topic. Katie, we're going to have a discussion about what accessibility looks like now. The paper, I think, has a pretty narrow scope of what accessibility was in 1992, but Jennifer Hill did evaluate over 25 universities and what accessibility looked like there. So it'll be interesting in the future to compare what she wrote about and then what we're talking about today. But to stay in the present realm, how would you define accessibility on campus, or what's been your experience over the last 4.5 years as a UBC student?
Thinking about accessibility at university, I think I personally, in my position, have had a fairly easy time accessing university in the many ways that one can, quote unquote, access university, in that I haven't experienced a lot of barriers to university, be they social or cultural or financial or physical or mental, which is what we talk about on the show a lot of the time.
Yeah.
But accessibility at university, I think, can be any of those things. So it could be coming from a different culture. And do you experience barriers being at university as a result of the cultural differences? Is it really difficult for you coming from a different environment to adjust and feel welcomed and comfortable in this environment? In that same way, social accessibility, we talked about this a little bit earlier in the week. Do you feel comfortable with your positionality? Maybe you're of a certain ethnicity, or you come from a particular part of the world, or you have a different ability than those around you. Do you feel comfortable with that positionality in that environment? So I think accessibility at university involves the barriers that you might encounter or might not encounter as a result mm-hmm. of your positionality.
I agree. I think there's accessibility before you get to university, accessibility getting into university, and then accessibility once you're a student at university. And those all look a little bit different, but they're all really important.
Mm-hmm.
I think sometimes, and Jennifer Hill mentioned this in her article, actually, from 1992, saying that, you know, assistance offered to students with a disability, or as we also have broadened our scope, students of different ethnicities, students of different backgrounds, students who maybe struggle with mental health, all of these different things, assistance has to be offered to them and does not end upon entry into a program. So maybe UBC has changed over the years their policies into admitting students, but we want to make sure that once those students are here, that they're still going to be successful and they're not going to face barriers. There's lots and lots of different services at UBC. That's not to say that we don't need more. We are familiar with Access and Diversity, and they work with the university to create, in their words, an inclusive living and learning environment to which all students can thrive. I have a job with Access and Diversity in their mentoring program, and I've seen that it can be really beneficial to a lot of students. I know you have experiences and you're aware of some other things on campus as well that have to do with accessibility.
Through Access and Diversity in particular, I've been a note taker for the last couple of years, and I was an exam assistant this past exam period in December with them, which involved supporting the logistics behind accommodated exams for students. Mm-hmm. So if they were unable to complete an exam in the allotted time for the general class population, or they required special assistance like a scribe maybe to be writing the exam and they needed a private room for that, a reduced distraction environment, and there were exam invigilators and other hired employees with Access and Diversity that helped with those up-close components, and then I helped sorting behind the scenes, and I know they accommodated around 2,000 students this past exam period, so they're doing a lot of work. But another resource I've become a little bit more familiar with is the Equity and Inclusion Office,
mm-hmm.
which I think, deals with some of the larger, maybe sociological and bigger picture items that might surround discrimination and harassment or conflict that you might experience as a student or a staff member. They try to support those sorts of efforts on campus. They coordinate a lot of workshops and that sort of thing to help improve that social environment.
Yeah, the Equity Enhancement Fund, I believe that's its specific name, is actually the reason for why our collective exists. And they were the one that actually gave a grant to CITR upon CITR's proposal for the project All Our Voices. And it's funded all three of our collectives, including the Accessibility Collective, and is what gave me this job in opportunity, and which was what created this show. So they do lots of cool stuff. They do what you talk about, social accessibility. They also fund projects like this, which could definitely fall under social accessibility. I'm also just reading on, going back to access and diversity, they also offer financial support with students with a disability, which I think is a really critical resource. So they say that they offer scholarships, awards, and bursaries, and access financial advice and assistance for students, because some students with a disability face more substantial financial barriers as well. And so that's an important thing to recognize. As you talked about academic accommodations, they also list on their website academic concessions. So if a student's having a psychological difficulty or a physical illness that is affecting their academic performance, they may be eligible to apply for an academic concession or accommodation, which could look like potentially prolonging their degree a little bit farther, taking a semester off, deferring projects, finishing them later. So there's lots of different kind of things that can happen, which is nice to see.
Yeah. I think recognizing that those things that can come up in the moment and aren't necessarily a chronic condition or something that you're dealing with, things can come up in the moment that have a really significant impact on your ability to function, or it could be temporary mental illness that you're experiencing. It's not necessarily chronic depression, but something significant has happened in your life and you are experiencing depression, and that can be an incredible impediment to getting coursework done. So I think having those more temporary measures are important, and they show that they recognize that that's a thing that can happen.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm going to go back to Jennifer Hill's article to tie that in. In 1990, just to give you a statistic that really exemplifies that there are barriers, and we don't necessarily have an answer to why this is, but looking at her statistic, in the age bracket of 15 to 65 years, 5.1% of all people with a disability within that age bracket reported that they had obtained a post-secondary degree, and that was of the 1.7 million people in Canada at that time who reported having a disability. Of the population in Canada who reported not having a disability, 11% of those people reported having obtained a post-secondary degree. So there's this huge discrepancy. It's 5% versus 11%. And Jennifer Hill addresses that we don't know exactly why that is, but that access to university is absolutely at the forefront of the conversation that needs to happen. We found, doing some research for just this little talk, it's actually really hard to get data from UBC right now about the population of our students at UBC who do identify as having a disability. So that's a little bit frustrating because we can't really do a comparison, and that would be a really nice thing to do. They've kind of got their neat and tidy website, which says we offer services to someone who identifies as having disability or someone who needs some assistance. But it's hard to really judge, quantitatively at least, if that's making a difference. I think we see individuals who have had success who might not otherwise have without those accommodations, but it would be really nice if we could look at the really large picture, and that would maybe help move things forward. But as of right now, we don't have access to that data. So maybe we can do a little bit of snooping in the future and find some more quantitative data. As someone who has like a combined arts and science focus in my degree, I do definitely like my scientific data. But it's also interesting to hear social stories. And just a reminder to our listeners, we would really love for you to send us an email or post on our social media pages if you've had experiences with accessibility on campus and what accessibility looks like to you at university. So shoot us an email anytime at accessibilitycollective@citr.ca. To finish up our discussion, was there anything else that you wanted to mention in terms of accessibility at university or at UBC specifically?
I think you touched upon it when you mentioned that having a different level of ability in some area, be it physical or mental or otherwise, can lead to financial barriers that somebody mm-hmm. else might not have to face in the same way, because it can be a little more difficult to obtain work if there's a stigma associated with your ability. And I think that that speaks to the idea of intersectionality,
yeah.
which has to do with all of these intersecting aspects of people and society. So if you are somebody that is identifying as having a physical disability and you also come from a different ethnic background than perhaps the majority that you're surrounded by, you might face different barriers to access socially and financially and culturally than somebody who identifies as having a physical disability but is of the same ethnicity of the majority that they're surrounded yeah. by, and they come from an upper class background. Maybe you probably haven't faced the same number of barriers leading up to that, and universities will continue to not be as much of a barrier. I think finances are a big Absolutely. Accessibility thing that are in UBC students' conversations right now, because yeah. talking about international students, UBC prides itself on that, and it's going to become increasingly difficult to have a truly diverse population here, which is upsetting for me to think about, because many people are going to find it a lot more difficult to come to this high performing university where they could acquire all of these great skills, because they're not going to be able to afford it.
Yeah. I think, you know, as two students who are just finishing our fifth year of our undergrad degree, we've seen that process of every year tuition is increased and increased. And we are domestic students. And, you know, there's international students who are even seeing higher increases. But it is kind of sad to be leaving and think that, you know, university has become less accessible for a lot of people since the time that we started 5 years ago. And that's not something we necessarily think is good at all. It's probably something we think is terrible.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know really. We're not in charge of finances or determining how much university will cost.
We can make a big fuss about
yes,
it.
Yes, we can.
And I'm not sure what it might also be like, just thinking, I'm looking at some of the equity and inclusion office resources, and they have a lot of resources for Aboriginal students.
Yeah.
And I don't know what the impact of increasing tuition might be on the way that students that are able to identify themselves as having legal Aboriginal status, what that might look like for them accessing university, because there are already so many intersecting issues associated with Indigeneity in Canada, and it might become much more convoluted if the prices continue to go up to attend universities like this.
Absolutely. I think that would be a good question that we could throw over to our Indigenous collective here in their show, Unceded Airwaves. That intersectionality really ties together our three collectives, the Women's Collective, the Accessibility Collective, mm-hmm. and the Indigenous Collective. And I think it would be really neat to have a conversation on kind of all of those three tied together with accessibility in the future. For now, I think we're going to stop our chat so that you can run off to class. I've made you a little bit late, but I'm glad you got to come here and chat with me, even though you're missing our live show. So that's been really nice.
Yeah, I'm glad that I'll still get to be there, even though I'll be in a much more stressful graduation photo situation at
yes,
the time.
Katie is getting her graduation photos done as we are airing this conversation right now. But I'm going to let her... Well, we cut Katie off there a little bit, but that was the end of the chat that I had with her yesterday. You know, we just sat down and talked about accessibility at UBC, and I hope we can further that discussion in the future. But we're back live now in the studio. Katie is off getting her grad photos taken, probably looking very pretty somewhere, and she'll be back next week, so you can look forward to that. I think we're going to send it to a song now.
New music is always very exciting, and this song landed in my email inbox not too long ago. Here's a brand new song from Shiloh Charity. Here is Sparkles, produced by Ryan Gildemont.
Sparkles. Celebrate the Year of the Monkey at the largest Lunar New Year event in UBC history. The UBC Centennial Lunar New Year Festival takes place February 5th from 12 to 5 at the Nest. Celebrate at this free event with food, games, arts and crafts, music, and dance performances for people of all ages. Learn more at diversity.ubc.ca.
This is it, what you've been waiting for. After months of intense competition, great tunes, and epic shows, it all comes down to one last night. Late Spring versus Walgreen versus the Psychic Alliance. It's the showdown for it all. It's the Shindig 2015 final. Our three semi-winners will compete on Friday, February 5th for the title of Shindig Champion and for the grand prize, including recording time, festival appearances, Discorder and CITR features, merch, showcases, and more. So come out to Pat's Pub and Brew House at 403 East Hastings for one last night of Shindig epicness. Enjoy some pool, locally made beer, and three great bands. Lunar Patrol. Cover is $6 at the door, and the show is 19+. Check out CITR on Facebook or on Twitter at CITR Shindig for all the details.
So, welcome back to All Access Pass on CITR 101.9. You heard Katie and I chatting yesterday about accessibility, and we're going to bring it back live and chat about it a little bit more right now, because this episode is our smorgasbord episode, and we're just going to keep talking about what our collective is all about. So now I'm joined on mic by Spencer and Caitlin, and I have to correct, Caitlin, you say your last name for everyone because I totally butchered it.
It's Tatham?
Tatham. Caitlin Tatham. I should know that because I've known Caitlin for 2 years, but I almost messed it up. Not too far away. Spencer, you were going to talk a little bit about your experience with accessibility on campus, not at UBC, but you had other experiences.
Yeah. For many years, I've been in post-secondary, studying journalism and now broadcasting, and I've had tons of experience with different colleges and accessibility. One school that specifically stood out for me was Langara and BCIT. Just how accessible everything was. Everything was near elevators, and I didn't have a problem with stairs at all. Everything was ground level, so it was just awesome to have a barrier-free experience with education.
Yeah, you said you didn't have any problem with stairs, and I chuckled to myself. I think you mean there was no spaces where the only way to get somewhere was stairs.
I mean, there was...
I would be pretty impressed if you just went charging down in your massive electric wheelchair down the stairs. Oh, yeah, I got no problem with stairs.
Yeah.
But you meant it was accessible in terms... That'd be pretty sweet. Maybe that'll happen one day. But yeah. They provided you with elevator service. Have you ever had... you talked about it as a positive experience. Was there some barriers that you did have to face? Some things you had to get over? Not physically?
Yeah. Well, there was some campuses where they didn't have very many elevators, and where I actually had to take the long way around outside to get to some classes. And I'm like, doesn't make me want to go to this specific school because they aren't making it accessible and easy for me to want to learn at this post-secondary institution.
Yeah, I think you point to something that's really important, there's a difference between putting an elevator in a building and putting an elevator in a building that gives you equal social and physical access. You know, coming through the back door in a wheelchair, coming through the back door with an elevator kind of tucked out of the way is not the same as getting to come in the front door with everyone else. It does put you at a disadvantage. So I think that it's important to consider for any architects out there and engineers who are designing new buildings, let's make it socially accessible and socially equal as well, right, when we're designing things so that you have the same experience as everyone else.
Yeah, and I just want to be, treated as normal. Just because I'm in a wheelchair, it doesn't mean I should be treated any less than anyone else. So
totally. Caitlin, I think you can also speak to this a little bit. Caitlin is writing or in the process of starting a technical writing project.
I just finished the proposal for a technical writing course.
Yeah.
And I'm hoping to do it on the accessibility of the mathematics annex.
At UBC, right?
At UBC, yeah.
Okay.
So that building was built in 1925 as like a semi-permanent building, but it's only supposed to last 40 years. But now it's been 90 years and it's still there, and there's been very little renovations. So there's no wheelchair. It's two floors, but there's no elevator. And there is only one ramp, and I'm going to go at some point and do a bigger investigation and look into exactly what the other physical barriers are in that building.
Yeah, you and I both take classes in the building next door as geography majors, or geology, which is also pretty old building and not as accessible. And unfortunately, UBC does have old buildings and a lot of new buildings, but I think you have kind of a plethora of buildings to choose from looking at issues of accessibility. What was it that made you choose accessibility? Because I know this project wasn't specified that you had to do accessibility. It was a technical writing project.
Yeah, so when I decided to choose a project, I really wanted to do something that I thought would maybe make a difference or something I was really interested in and something I was passionate about. And originally I thought I'd do recycling because that seemed like an easy one. But I don't think, as a lot of students on campus think about accessibility every day. I've had the privilege to work with people. I've worked at Easter Seals. And so it's been more in my mind, but it's still something I don't think about that much. And it was just really exciting to think about that. And there's so many small things that we could do. And if there's any way that my paper could help in any way, that would be amazing.
Yeah, that would be incredible. Spencer, I think we should ask you, as someone who does use wheelchair, Caitlin and I don't use wheelchairs, so, it's important that we talk about it too, but I think one of the most important things to do in these kind of assignments and projects designing is go to someone who uses wheelchair and talk to them about what they would like to see. So we obviously don't have the capacity to redesign the math annex right now, but I think that Caitlin's right, writing about this kind of stuff can make a difference. What would you like to see in future building designs or renovations that make campuses more accessible?
I think I would just like to see more input from either students or faculty members that perhaps use wheelchairs, or maybe wheelchairs or crutches or whatever, because there's the way I look at it, there's two versions of accessibility. There's the accessibility from the point of view of the user, and then there's the accessibility from the point of view of an able-bodied person. And usually the able-bodied person tries to get it right, but they try really hard, but most of the time it doesn't work out. But I'm not gonna sit here and put those put the people that construct the buildings down, because that's not how I roll.
No, you're definitely a really positive guy. I like your attitude. I think you're right. It's kind of a really simple solution, right? You said that people try really hard. We can give some people credit for trying really hard. I think there's also people that are designing buildings that aren't trying very hard, which is disappointing. But for those people who are, and those people who we would like to try a little harder, one of the really simple solutions is consultation. Get some people in who have access needs that are a little different than the normal person who is able to physically access a building easily. Consult them, see what they need, and then put those into effect. There's kind of this, I know at UBC sometimes I see like big projects and like, oh, we've done a town hall meeting or a consultation with students as kind of the poster of innovative design, and then they don't really take those ideas and implement them in the building that they construct. So that's disappointing. Hopefully we can see improvements in that. Let's throw it to a song right now. I think we're going to send you to a song by Petal. This is called Heaven, and don't tune out because we're going to keep talking about accessibility when you come back.
So they don't regret how they're born.
Welcome back to All Access Pass on CITR 101.9 FM. We just wanted to touch back in with Caitlin. Caitlin, you were telling us about your technical writing project. And when that song was on air, Caitlin just said to me, you know, one of the things she'd really like to do with her assignment is get the input of people who have physical access needs on campus or maybe have stories about accessibility, inequity with accessibility, anything like that. If you have a story, if you want to share your opinion, you should shoot us an email so that we can pass that along to Caitlin in her project. So email us at accessibilitycollective@citr.ca. So we only have a couple more minutes left for tonight's episode. I wanted to talk briefly about what we have going on next week. So next week is the last week of classes for me and Caitlin, at least before reading break. Spencer doesn't get a reading break, but we're really looking forward to that. And we're excited because we have a sweet show lined up for next week, right before we go on break. We're going to be looking at sport and recreation and access to that kind of stuff. We have an interview that's going to be about dance, adaptive dance, danceability. I won't give too much away, but we have a pretty cool interview. You can look forward to that. Caitlin might even come back and talk about some accessible sporting things that she does. Do you want to just mention that quickly, Caitlin?
Yeah, so I was the Ropes and Recreation Games programmer at Easter Seals Camp Shaunigan in 2014. So I did the high ropes there. Yeah. I'm a gymnastics coach. And I coach here at UBC and back home, and I do some accessible stuff with that.
Yeah.
And then as well, I'm a snowboard instructor. I don't deal with accessibility too much in that because that's a separate program, but my dad is very heavily involved in the adaptive snow sports school program.
That's awesome. We'd love to have you come back and talk about that. Other than that, I don't think we have much more to touch on. Spencer, do you want to throw us to our last song?
And ending off the night, here is San Francisco's own The Stone Foxes with Everybody Knows.
Judge what they see. It's white collar crime in the face.